and welcome to the Painting Podcast, episode 15. What a joke. So why do criminals always carry a sketchbook and some pens? Because they're always attracted to sketchy situations. My apologies. However, this episode, we're going to be talking about jokes and the similarities between making jokes and making paintings. And what can we learn from jokes, especially dad jokes, really, really simple jokes, and paintings? Let's get into it. So a joke begins with a setup. And a setup is basically introducing us to the characters and the place in which something is going to occur. In a dad joke, these are often really, really clear and concise, like, why does the scarecrow have no teeth? Or something like that. It's one sentence, and it kind of throws us off balance a little bit, and it makes the listener experience a bit of tension and want to hear the answer. So, why did the scarecrow have no teeth? Because all he ever wanted to be was outstanding in his field. Now, let's dissect this joke a little bit. My apologies once again. I'm sorry, there's more dad jokes coming throughout the duration of this podcast. So if that's offensive, you might want to, you know, just go back now. But let's dissect this joke a little bit. And when we start off, the setup is, why does a scarecrow have no teeth? And this creates the context. It builds the anticipation in the listener. And we're also establishing the premise or scenario. Just with one simple sentence, our minds start to form the expectations of where this joke might lead. But then there's a twist, right? Something unexpected happens that disturbs us and how we envisioned this joke developing. And that is often referred to as the incongruity stage of telling a joke. It's almost a form of cognitive dissonance. We think the joke is heading in one direction, and then we're pulled in another direction. This can also often have an element of surprise, either with the scenario or with the wordplay. Often with dad jokes, you know, it's with the wordplay, of course, and with our joke, why does a scarecrow have no teeth? Because he was outstanding in his field. That is, you know, obviously outstanding is the wordplay that makes it funny. And the tension is really what's important in telling a joke. Not that I'm a great joke teller, but in terms of analyzing a joke, the tension is where the magic really happens in getting to the punchline and getting that payoff in the end. If you just tell a joke and you don't have the right timing, it won't land properly. And the listener is not going to get that necessary tension and release that is required for a joke to work. Now, let's take a look at a couple different paintings and analyze them, thinking about these concepts involving humor, jokes, and its relation to experiencing an artwork or a painting. How is that similar to experiencing a joke? So the first painting we're going to be looking at is by René Magritte. This is kind of an obvious one, but René Magritte, of course, is one of the founding members of Surrealism, French artist, turn of the 20th century, a little bit after that, doesn't matter. Anyway, the painting we're going to be looking at is The Son of Man, and in this painting we can see a man in a suit. He's very well dressed. He's standing upright in a very stiff position, and he's facing the viewer, and his body and suit is completely visible from the shoulders up, and he's got a tie on, and his hands are neatly by his sides. Now, the most distinctive element in this painting is a large green apple that hovers in front of this man's face, basically completely obscuring it. So this apple is positioned in a way that we can't see his eyes, we can't see the center of his face, and we only see the outline of some facial features. The background of the painting has some fluffy, nice clouds, And this creates some depth and just adds to this very, very simplistic scene with a very simplistic square background and kind of like a little stone wall towards the bottom behind the main figure. So let's think about this painting similarly to how a joke is told. And we've got the setup, and then we have the punchline. So in this painting, we've got the figure, who we're all familiar with. This establishes a sense of familiarity. We all understand what a man in a suit is like. And then we have the punchline, which is the apple in front of his face. And this makes us question, why was the apple chosen? And it kind of gives us that incongruity, like we were talking about before, that creates some tension and makes us ask questions and gives us that element of surprise. And of course, this is really easy with the surrealists. A lot of their work is all about defying convention and otherwise very, very conservative painting and twisting it a little bit. Of course, we could see this with Persistence of Memory by Salvador Dali or something like that, where we have a typical barren landscape populated with melting clocks. But let's get into a couple other artworks as well, using the same method to analyze them and seeing how these works don't necessarily have to be funny, but they can still follow this same pattern of setup and punchline in a painting that you can also see and hear in a joke. So the next painting let's take a look at is going to be Self-Portrait with Thorn Necklace and Hummingbird by Frida Kahlo. And in this painting, it's a self-portrait, obviously, and Frida Kahlo presents herself in a similar pose. It's a frontal pose, capturing the upper half of her body, and she's got on some very vibrant floral-patterned dress. And there's some animals in the background. It looks like a spider monkey and like a puma or something like that. And that's kind of the setup. But then I would say the punchline is that around her neck, instead of having a necklace, she has a thorn necklace that is encircling her throat. And perched on these thorns is a small little hummingbird. And that is a sharp contrast to the thorns around her neck. Now, the setup in Self-Portrait with Thorn Necklace and Hummingbird gives us this familiar self-portrait format. And Frida Kahlo is working in a tradition of portraiture in this way. We know how to approach a portrait painting. So she starts off with this very familiar format. That's the setup. In the punchline, when we see the thorn necklace and the hummingbird together, this is the unexpected and contrasting element. I guess you could also say the spider monkey and puma in the background are as well. They're kind of symbols in this respect too. But I think the real point that was the focus of this painting was that hummingbird and those thorns. So the thorn necklace is kind of like a symbolism for Frida's pain and suffering. Of course, it relates to Jesus's crown of thorns as well, which has a long history in oil painting. But it also alludes to the emotional and physical problems that Frida suffered from and the pain which resulted from that as well. But then we've got this delicate and colorful little hummingbird perched on these thorns, and this kind of displays fragility and grace and resilience and kind of a vibrancy of life. You know, there's few animals that exude that nature more than a hummingbird. Another way that artists can deliver a punchline is through something I'll call mystery and concealment. And what I mean by that, we can look at another painting, the Arnolfini portrait by Jan van Eyck. And here we have a wealthy merchant couple, and they're in this ridiculously meticulously detailed interior space with beautiful colored cloths, and they have this elaborate clothing on. And the whole set is filled with all these symbolic objects that kind of signify their status and wealth, and there's a symbolism to them as well. And I often find that students in particular will approach paintings in this way that involves discerning some mystery, where they're looking at a painting and they're thinking about, how can I discern what's happening in here? How can I be Tom Hanks in the Da Vinci Code, so to speak? And so they look at the painting and they're analyzing these different small elements that are meant to be hidden, but they become revealed upon further investigation. In the Arnolfini portrait, we've kind of got multiple punchlines hidden within the painting. After, of course, we have, like I said, the setup is just a couple in a room and they're very rich. But then, oh, there's a little dog down there. And, you know, maybe that could just be a dog, but that dog could also be a symbol of fidelity and kind of, you know, stand by your man or whatever. And so we can read into these different little pieces that we don't see initially. At first, we approach the painting and we see, oh, two people. Oh, wait, there's a dog. Then if we look in the back of the room of the painting, we'll see a small little mirror in the back. And in that small little mirror, we'll notice that Jan van Eyck has created a very small portrait of himself, self-portrait, in that mirror, painting the painting. So that's kind of another hidden little punchline. And this involves, again, the concept of mystery and concealment. So we see the painting at first, we approach it as a portrait painting of a rich aristocratic couple, and then we realize these smaller elements are hidden within it. Now, there needs to be, in order for this to work, because obviously when I said, oh, the dog in the Arnolfini portrait could represent fidelity, we need to have some sort of, I said that because I've studied the painting a little bit. I think a random person off the street that saw that dog might not make that connection, probably wouldn't make that connection immediately. So, but at the time, people would read paintings differently than people would read them today. So there was a contextual understanding between the painting and the viewer, where those viewing the painting would have an understanding of what's going on. And jokes rely on that same sort of contextual understanding. There has to be some specific cultural, social, or historic touchstone that creates a shared vocabulary and allows the audience to understand and appreciate the underlying references present there in being able to enjoy either an artwork or a joke. In addition to that, there also needs to be some emotional connection. So when we hear a joke or we see a painting, it evokes something familiar to the viewer or the audience. So there needs to be a sense of relatability or some shared experience. Nostalgia, of course, would be good. And this will kind of heighten the impact of the artwork or the humor itself. In addition to that, it also, you know, simply needs to be communication. So jokes and paintings are both essentially, you know, just forms of communicating. So there needs to be some shared vocabulary so artists and comedians can basically say what they want to say. And when they do so, the end goal is to evoke some sort of specific emotion. And I know this concept often gets a lot of pushback that, oh, we're looking at art to have an emotional response, but in a sense, we are. Just as when we tell a joke, the intention is to get an emotional response. Hopefully we get a laughter. But if we don't get laughter, we still might get a groan, right? Especially with a dad joke. Like I told at the beginning of this episode, you probably heard that and you know, felt for a second, oh, that's awful, right? And that's okay too. That's still an emotional reaction. A painting doesn't have to be good. A painting can be bad and elicit a bad emotional reaction as well. So how can you use this and apply it to your own work? You know, how can you use the method of writing a joke and use it to create a painting? So utilizing my 7-step process just for 1990, no, just kidding. But I do have a 7-point process that we can get into, and it involves the way somebody would craft a joke, and I think we can really apply this to the way somebody could create a painting as well. So the first step is to choose a concept or an idea. Just get an overall theme that you want to convey in your work. It could be something funny. It could be something deep or emotionally engaging. Just figure out what is the theme you want to convey through this painting. What is the concept or idea inherent within this painting? Once you've got that, step two is to identify visual elements. So break down the concept into different visual elements or symbols that would represent or communicate your idea effectively. So during this stage, you can consider certain colors or figures or objects that are going to convey your message, right? Step three, we've got the setup. So how do we, this is almost like the composition, how do we take all these visual elements and arrange them away in the painting where somebody coming to the painting is going to see one thing first and they're going to see something else later. And in this case, I'd recommend just following a simple tradition of art history like portraiture or landscape painting or, you know, historical narrative painting, whatever you want it to be. You can just pick one of these and kind of weasel your way into that trajectory of painting. So think of the setup. What is the setup? Boy sitting in room, right? Woman eating French fries, okay? Dog wearing sunglasses. What is it? What is going to capture the viewer's attention in coming to the painting and the overall scene being portrayed? Step four, you've got the punchline. So this is where something is unexpected or surprising. Could be some visual twist within the painting, but it's going to be the payoff, like we talked about in the other paintings. And you can choose how you want to utilize that punchline. If you want it to be through mystery and concealment, where somebody has to search for the punchline, or if it's something immediately present in center stage, such as the Frida Kahlo self-portrait piece that we talked about. So that's your punchline. Now you've got all these things, right? And you're going to have to, step five, refine and edit them. So don't just jump into the painting immediately. I know you're excited, but kind of refine and edit your composition a little bit and figure out some details, figure out where do we want people looking first in the painting? Where do we want them looking second? How can we use contrast and color, for instance, to kind of push things back into the background and highlight things maybe with higher contrast in the foreground? So refine and edit your composition a little bit. After you've done that, you're going to essentially test step six, test and evaluate. So you're going to make the painting, essentially, and then you're going to show it to people. So this is like telling a joke in front of an audience, right? So if you're a stand-up comedian, you have to go out and you put your joke out into the world and you see, do people laugh or not? So you show people the painting, which you've created, and you gauge their response to that painting. And then we get to step 7, which is we can iterate and improve based upon that feedback. So this is going to be either going back into that painting again and maybe changing some things up, or it could be just creating a new painting altogether. And I'm sure not everybody has, you know, this great group of friends who are also art critics consistently providing valuable feedback for your art. So a good way to test and evaluate can be simply to get an artist that you like, get one of their works, print it out on an actual piece of paper, or have a book of their work, and open up that book and put your painting right next to that image. And look at it and evaluate it and think for yourself, where was this successful and where wasn't it? So I hope you've enjoyed this episode looking at how paintings are related to comedy and joke writing. I'm Jeremiah Polacek. You can follow me at Jeremiah Polacek on Instagram and TikTok. And also go check out Oko Academy. Oko.academy is my one-on-one mentorship program in Prague, Czech Republic. And I'm also doing online coaching as well now. You can access more information about that over at Oko.academy. So thank you for listening. And as always, wait. There's one more thing. I was wondering why this frisbee kept on getting bigger and bigger. And then it hit me. Thanks for listening. Happy painting.